Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 15th of April 2016. Hello and a very warm welcome to you this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we will be reading some extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. Now, I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for John Parker, who is on holiday. Our editors this week are Sue Frayne, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas. I'm joined by our three readers this week, Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
John Reagan.
Hello.
Great confusion for me because I've got two Johns to deal with and I'm sure we get them in the wrong order. Let's hope not. Right, well, first two or three of our regular notices. If you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've just received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That's 01962 870370. Just to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from one item to the next or before the one track finishes, or you can go back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, you might like to know that as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You can either listen to it off the website, or you can download the recording to listen to it later. Or you could even plug your memory stick into the USB port on your computer. Possibilities are endless, aren't they? Well, the main headlines this week are Council rejects festival growth, teens arrested in drugs raids, illegal immigrants are caught in town. So, Margot, could we have the story behind the first headline, please?
And this is Council Rejects Festival Growth. Council bosses have curtailed Boomtown Fair's ambitions for 60,000 revellers. Organisers of the annual event held near Winchester wanted permission to increase numbers by 10,000 from the current 50,000. But Winchester City Council refused amid fears of increased traffic issues and crime and disorder. Peveril Bruce, the owner of the Mattley Estate where it is held, said he believed it was well able to cope with the new numbers. Now organisers of the popular summer music event are hoping that an increase of 5,000 will get the green light. Boomtown Festivals UK Limited had applied to up its licence capacity alongside changes in conditions under a minor variation application. In response, the council said it questioned whether an increase of such size could be considered minor. Concerns had been raised about the potential for public nuisance from additional traffic. The council said its decision was based on views of both police and the Highways Authority, who felt that the increase could boost crime and public nuisance. A second application to increase numbers by 5,000 is under consultation until April the 19th, with a decision due on April the 26th. The festival sparked 70 complaints in 2012, and a council investigation the following year amid claims of excessive noise. But last year, received fewer than half this number for a second year running. Winchester City Council and South Downs National Park Authority allowed last year's event to go ahead, but warned Mr. Bruce that he must, quote, consider the planning implications of future events, unquote. An application is due to be determined by South Downs National Park Authority this month.
Thank you, Margot. John, please. Teens arrested in drug raids. Police aimed to stamp out drug dealing in a major five-day operation in Winchester. Six people were arrested as part of Hampshire Constabulary's Operation Fortress campaign, and 14 people were searched. Four suspected drug dealers were arrested in Winchester last Friday when police stopped and searched a car.
Undercover and uniformed officers swooped on the group as residents in Water Lane watched. A spokesperson for Hampshire Police said, "On Friday, April the 8th, four people were arrested on Water Lane, Winchester, on suspicion of being concerned in the supply of Class A drugs." Police also made arrests in Jury Street on April the 4th, when two men were seen acting suspiciously. Police arrested a 15-year-old boy from London on suspicion of being concerned in the supply of Class A drugs. An 18-year-old man from London was also arrested on suspicion of possession of a drug of Class A and money laundering. Chief Inspector Claire Taylor said, "One of our aims is to make life as unpleasant as possible for those people suspected of being involved in drug dealing and crimes linked to drugs. These days of action saw officers from Winchester out and about in the city disrupting those suspecting of being involved in the supply of Class A drugs. Drugs have been a concern for residents in Water Lane who have called for the police to take further action."
Thank you. And that was from John Richards. And now John Reagan, please.
Illegal immigrants caught in town. Aylesford became the centre of a major police and border force operation after illegal immigrants were spotted fleeing a lorry. The town was awash with activity after police alerted the UK Border Agency to an incident where seven people were seen jumping from a vehicle on the northern edge of the town. And seven people, including six men and one possible minor, were arrested on suspicion of being in the UK illegally. The lorry was seen at the junction of Aylesford Road and Byton Lane at around 1 p.m. last Thursday. A Mr. Sneeder, a landscape gardener of Chandler's Ford, said, "I didn't see them jump out of the lorry, but I had a front row seat when the police closed the road over the dam at Old Aylesford Pond. I saw four of them in handcuffs. I would have said they looked Syrian. They were taken out of one van and put in another by the police. One of them had a massive grin on his face. What was going on, I'm not sure. They weren't struggling. They knew they'd been caught," added Mr. Sneeder. A police helicopter was seen flying low over the area for around 45 minutes. Paul Gilmore of Aylesford Travel on West Street said he saw police activity at 12:30 p.m. and later saw a police van with blacked-out windows pick up four people on the road. A Border Agency spokesperson told the Chronicle, "Immigration enforcement were contacted by Hampshire Police at 1:20 p.m. after officers attended an incident in Aylesford. Six men from Afghanistan were arrested on suspicion of entering the UK illegally. The group also had one possible minor who is yet to be age checked." The spokesman added, "If they have no right to remain in the UK, then we will take action to remove them." When asked if the men were on a lorry or if any men got away from the police, he said he did not have any further information. The Chronicle contacted Watercress businesses based in Old Aylesford and Byton Lane, and both denied that the lorry with the suspected illegal immigrants were connected with them.
Thank you, John. Now, quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices, then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Chronicle comment, George Hayter's column, Belgar and What's On, and then the lighting up times. So we start with the death notices. Barefoot, Brian John Barefoot, suddenly but peacefully, 5th of April, aged 79.
Burrows, Peggy Burrows, suddenly on the 1st of April, aged 83.
But Thomas Edward Butt, known as Teddy or Tom, passed away on Good Friday.
Edwards, Doreen Agnes Edwards, peacefully on the 6th of April, aged 83.
James, Brian James, 26th of March.
King, Della King, peacefully on the 4th of April.
Kirk, Barbara Helen Kirk, peacefully on the 5th of April, aged 92.
Robinson, Carol Julie Robinson, née Snell, peacefully on the 8th of April, age 76.
Now Margot will read Christian comment for us, please. Thank you, Margot.
And this week it is written by the Reverend Paul Kennedy, who is the rector of East Winchester, and he's entitled it Life to be Lived in Present, Not the Past. Oh, that today you would listen to his voice, is a verse St. Benedict advised his monks to say daily. As part of Psalm 95, it's also traditionally said by Catholics and Anglicans every morning. Oh, that today, it's a reminder that we can't live our life rushing after a receding future or pining for a romanticized past. The only life that we can live is today. And it's only today that we can hear his voice, hear our highest ideals and values. For a while, I've been reflecting with someone, looking at my time management and the resulting pressures of a busy workload. It's been a revelation, realizing that the main pinch point is not the sheer volume of work, although I could do better here. The main pinch point is how much, or how little, of what I do resonates with the values I hold. When do I stop to listen to his voice? I've realized the value of reflecting upon how I spend my time and the tasks I perform. What's feeding my values and feeding me? And what's conflicting with my values and draining me? Christian values are rooted in a God who is love, who makes himself primarily known by coming among us as a vulnerable human being, who bears the punishment of violent state, a collaborating establishment, and dies the death of a sinner, and who is raised demonstrating that death and sin is not the last word. An inspiring narrative, but no one can live just according to this ideal. Every Christian still contends with many conflicting values: the need to welcome refugees, the fear of losing our inherited culture, marketing pressures to be seen with the latest gadget, concerns over the environment, desires to help our children achieve their highest potential, concerns over inequalities of wealth and opportunity, etc. How much do all of us live aligned to our values and ideals? And how much conform to the norms and fears of our culture? How much of a vicar's, or teacher's, or nurse's, or journalist's typical workload is fed by the highest ideals of their profession, and how much by expectations of the post? The Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard said, "Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be loved forwards. We can only live in the today, and we can only change tomorrow, not yesterday." However, will we understand what we've achieved when we look backwards? Will we celebrate, or will we be filled with regret? The tools of reflective time management demonstrate it is not just a remorseful past that results from a failure to engage with our values today. It's an exhausting present and an unclear future. Psalm 95, verse 8 continues, "Oh, that today you would listen to his voice, harden not your hearts." We can harden our hearts to his voice, perhaps by overworking. We can numb our hearts to our highest ideals, perhaps by alcohol or consumption. Or we can open our hearts to that still small voice and take the risk of being changed.
Well, now we have letters for the editor. It's a mixed bag this week, but we start off with three letters about the coming referendum on Britain possibly leaving the European Union. So, John Richards, could you start us off, please?
I will. And this first one is from Julian Chisholm, who believes that it's crucial to stay in. "Sir, today marks the opening of the official campaigns for the EU referendum. Its crucial importance means that voters must ignore the myths, distortions and lies about the EU peddled for years by sections of the media and the selfish, raucous right. NATO, nuclear deterrence and the EU have made peace a reality in Western Europe since 1945. When there is much international uncertainty, a united Europe is a key factor in maintaining our security and sovereignty. This is not the time to weaken the EU by leaving. Power gets things done. As an EU member, the UK benefits from and influences the use of the EU's considerable soft power. This comes from EU solidarity, the size of its single market, and the strength of its regulatory systems. Outside the EU, our power in the globalising world will be diminished. Undeniably, the UK has prospered in the EU, an institution devoted to the well-being of all its citizens. Between 5% to 20% of our GDP, HD, is accounted for by being in the EU. We are no longer the sick man of Europe. Should we leave, we will deny ourselves an extra 7% increase in GDP HD that is expected from the proposals to complete the single market in financial and digital services. The lack of EU workers will constrain our growth, and our existing living standards will be put at risk. Further, we will no longer have the freedom to live in EU countries without hindrance. A vote to leave will trigger a severe sterling crisis. Interest rates will have to rise to defend sterling. The housing market will falter and mortgage holders will suffer. Worse still, the lax monetary conditions of recent years make it inevitable that inflation will take off, pushing interest rates up further. Under these conditions, growth will weaken, unemployment will rise, and the budget strategy will be in tatters. It is no coincidence that sterling is losing value. Both immediately and later, leaving the EU looks like an own goal of cataclysmic proportions. That's from Julian Chisholm, Arthur Road, Hyde, Winchester.
And Mike Kennedy from South Wanston has a contrasting view in his letter headed Brexit Holidays. Sir, a few days ago the government were telling us that if we left the EU, holidays abroad would be far more expensive. It was a call echoed by the budget airlines. Those of us on the leave side said such claims were nothing more than scaremongering. And we now discover that the usual holiday resorts in France, Germany and so on are being shunned by holidaymakers because of anticipated trouble from the vast numbers of, quote, refugees and immigrants in these nations, particularly on the beaches. And we're choosing holidays in lesser-known places around Europe instead. And guess what? These places are actually cheaper, and the airlines are flying holidaymakers there. As we who want freedom and democracy returned by leaving the EU have said all along, it's market forces in demand which often drive the holiday firms, and not the other way round.
Lord Chiji of Hamble Arice entitles his letter Trade with Africa. Sir, having recently returned from Addis Ababa, I find there is another dimension to a rational debate on the UK membership of the European Union. Without exception, members of the diplomatic corps, the United Nations, international agencies and governments from across Africa could not fathom the logic behind a UK exit from the EU. They feared influence on decision-making between the EU and the African Union and access to security intelligence in Africa, currently shared with the UK by EU states, would be compromised. Even more significant is the impact on trade between Africa and the UK. With economic growth rates at double or even triple those in Europe, with burgeoning middle classes demanding and getting high-quality manufactured goods and services, and unprecedented investment levels, Africa is a long-term growth market of choice. In 2012, annual trade flows between Africa and the EU, including the UK, reached $350 billion. For China, the figure was $200 billion, and for the USA, $100 billion. At the annual meeting of finance ministers at the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa, I had the opportunity to take part in discussions on the implementation of economic partnership agreements that have been negotiated between the EU and five African economic regions, comprising 33 countries, as well as the Asia and Pacific regions. The agreements are designed to remove trade barriers and tariffs that impede trade and economic growth between Europe and Africa. Such is their complexity. It has taken 15 years to reach the signing and implementation stage. Should the UK leave the EU, we would be faced with renegotiating trade agreements from scratch. Not very rational for a country dependent on trade for economic survival. Lord Chiji of Hamburger Rice, Jacqueline's Lane, Alsford.
And now for something quite different. This letter from A.J. Nicholas is entitled Market Madness. Sir, if the Christmas market does not have any stalls selling food or beverages, then it won't harm the high street. The crowds will gravitate to the city centre and see what else the high street has to offer. We simply cannot have another round of post-Christmas shop closures. All these traders need a good Christmas to see them through until spring. Since then, we've had a domino effect of shops going to the wall. Since the council's income from the street market has trebled in 5 years, it is in their interest to back this proposal and not Silver Hill, fool's gold. Where exactly are the retailers to take up the shop space provided by this scheme? What shall we have? Another pound shop? Another junk shop? Why not? King's Walk already looks like Harry Steptoe's yard. We are stuck with the street market because people don't want to just shop anymore, they want to graze at the same time. With the cathedral's running costs of £10,000 a day, and the scaffolding on the eastern side of the great building costing £1 million to hire for 2 years, we are stuck with the Christmas market as well. It's time for a compromise. And that's from A.J. Nicholas, Paintersfield, St. Cross, Winchester.
And here's an impassioned letter about local services for our very youngest children. Sir, Sure Start services for the under fives were an unparalleled national success, introduced by the Labour government, determined to address both childcare and education issues for children all over the country. The investment was significant, as were the strategies designed to improve the situation. It was an investment to protect the youngest in our society from hard-working, low-paid families who could not afford the luxury and expense of private nursery or childcare. It offered hope and a very good start to their future, vital for their development and for the country. Tory-controlled Hampshire County Council blatantly sold off their Sure Start services 5 years ago to Action for Children, completely ignoring the excellent local consortium bids which would have preserved and enhanced provision. Action for Children immediately sacked staff, reduced service levels, and systematically asset-stripped Sure Start provision. Quality and delivery have been a concern, and now HCC are again to eradicate the last vestiges of the provision, presumably to the highest bidder, in an act of pure political spite. Another act of deliberate Tory destruction heaped upon the voiceless vulnerable in society, children who cannot speak for themselves. As chair of the Carol Sure Start Centre in 2011, I wrote to Sarah Tether, the Lib Dem minister responsible for under-fives provision, about coalition government plans. She replied, "Early years is a key priority for the government, and Sure Start has proven itself as a programme that has the capacity to be life-changing, especially for vulnerable families. The DfE business plan commits to retaining a national network of Sure Start children's centres with a core universal offer, but focused on those families who need it most." So, an untruthful statement, followed by coalition destruction. She subsequently left the government in disgust. In our local elections, let us remember it was not only the Tories but the power-hungry and deceitful Lib Dems who eliminated under five's provision for the hard-working people of Winchester. And that's from Peter Rees, the former city councillor and Labour group leader of Monarch Way in Winchester.
Pauline Moore writes about market relief. Sir, how wonderful it is to walk the length of Winchester's High Street on a Monday and a Tuesday without the obstructions and smells of the market stalls. Hope surfaced when it was announced that the City Council were discussing moving the market to a more suitable site, and was dashed when it was reported their review found that the market stall holders wanted to stay in the High Street, and so they have been persuaded to leave it there. Of course the market traders want to stay there, as it is a prominent position. Did they actually ask any local people what they felt? Probably not, as many of them, like me, avoid the town on market days. In my opinion, it does nothing for the city. In fact, as the editorial comment in last year's Chronicle suggests, there are few Wintonians who like the market where it is. I feel the council's decision is yet again proof that all they are interested in is finance and are out of touch with local opinion. If it has to stay where it is, it should be on one day a week only, as it used to be. Pauline Moore, King Alfred Place, Hyde, Winchester.
Elizabeth Thorne writes about a boundary blunder. Sir, it's official. We've changed wards. It seems the Conservative city councillors were aware of this, as we've just received an election leaflet. No actual visit, and I've never heard of either of them before. Over the past few months, there have been odd articles in the Chronicle about the new delineation of wards, but no details. I was told a few weeks ago, during a conversation about other matters with a current councillor, that we would be changing wards from St Michael's to St Paul's, which seems a long way away. Having received the polling card, which has no mention whatsoever of which ward it applies to, I spoke to someone from the election office of the City Council and was told they had done all they were statutorily required to do, mainly putting information on the council's website. However, unless one has access to this and knows when to look at it, navigating one's tortuous way around the ramifications therein, how is one supposed to know to take a look? I asked whether there were detailed maps or a list of roads affected, and was told that these were not yet available, though I've just found that they are, if you look in the right place. I asked why no letter had been sent to the affected residents, and was told it would cost too much to write to all the electorate, which wasn't what I'd asked for. On the poll card it says, "Your ward or polling station may have changed due to local government boundary commission changes." Our polling station at UOW hasn't changed, so one would infer that the boundary had not changed either. No letter and no name of the ward on the poll card. How can this be regarded as being adequate? The new prospective councillors will have to make themselves known in their new areas, or the voting will be done, again, strictly along party lines, in the absence of any other information. So writes Elizabeth Thorne, Airlie Lane, Winchester.
And here's another blast about local politics, this time from Andrew Beadle, who lives at Milesdown Place in Winchester. Sir, Judith Martin of Winchester Independence says that she resigned from the Lib Dems about 10 years ago. But I'm wondering whether she is not still a Lib Dem at heart, just not a party member. Saying one is independent sounds good, but it can cover a wide spectrum of opinion. At least with party candidates, voters have a reasonable idea of their views and policies. Having sat in the public gallery at quite a few council meetings, I saw how ineffective the then independent group was. After the elections, the first task of city councillors will be to elect the leader, almost certainly either a Conservative or a Lib Dem. If there is a hung council, this election will determine which party is to be in control. Voters are therefore entitled to know before the elections how many independent councillors would approach this question.
We are extorted by this letter from Richard Saunders to join Speedwatch. Sir, since 2013, thanks to the sterling voluntary work undertaken by Penny Smith, teams of Speedwatch volunteers have been monitoring traffic speeds in Coldon Common and Twyford and passing details of speeding vehicles to Hampshire Constabulary for appropriate action. After miserable winter weather, the team in Coldon Common has already run two sessions in March and has two a month booked for the next few months. As team coordinator, I was therefore astonished to read, in Conservative Party election literature, that prospective Tory councillors Sue Cook and Maureen Rees say their priority includes the reintroduction of Speedwatch in Coldon Common and Twyford. Before local election candidates make pronouncements about what they see as local priorities, they would be well advised to better acquaint themselves with the wards they apparently feel qualified to represent. Like many residents of Coldon Common, our local Speedwatch team members, seven in number, are extremely concerned about excessive speeds, which is why we give up time to operate Speedwatch. These require at least three trained volunteers to be present on each occasion. And with more volunteers, we would be able to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of the sessions. Were Sue and Maureen inclined to join us, they would receive a very warm welcome. Any other volunteers would be very welcome too. My contact details are given below. Richard Saunders, 6 Piping Road, Coldon Common, rcs201@icloud.com, 07941 321 413.
Exec must go, writes Rod Francis. Sir, as a frequent visitor to Hampshire and the beneficiary of superb healthcare in France, I keep up to date on a daily basis through the TV and online press. I cannot believe that the chief executive of Southern Health is still in her job. She says lessons have been learned with regard to all the issues surrounding the controversy at the Trust. Surely, if she were really as good as she says, then she would anticipate those problems and take steps to ensure that they don't happen. My view is that she can't delegate and therefore has a management crisis. My advice is go now before you have to do more apologising. That letter is from Rod Francis, La Porterie, Normandy, France.
Here's a letter with a rather attention-grabbing title. I love tax dodgers. Sir, again we see the loony left and the have-nots trying to make something out of a non-story regarding the Prime Minister and his tax affairs. And the Labour Party jump on the bandwagon because they have nothing else to criticise the government for. Under Jeremy Corbyn, who is the leadership what Gary Glitter is the childcare. I've never seen such a weak leader since Kinnock. England will have won the World Cup before Labour ever govern this country again. Instead of supporting the politics of envy, someone should stand up and tell it like it is. Inheritance tax is re-taxing already taxed income, is abhorrent and should be abolished. And that very strong view is held by John Airy of Mortimer Close in Winchester.
Thank you, John. Now, we go on to your say, and funnily enough, you would have thought somebody had sorted this out properly, wouldn't you? Your say is when the Chronicle's roving reporter goes out and asks the people of Winchester a particular question. And this question this week is, with Prime Minister David Cameron making his tax returns public, should all MPs release their tax returns? Now, the first person who was asked was a lady called Phoebe Culshaw, 45, of East
Preston, housewife and mother of two, and she said no, because I feel if we trust HMRC to do their job, they should have been judged by the same standards as all the rest of us. I don't think it should be a requirement.
Charles Baslinton, age 71, of the Avenue, Oresford, working to set up a community bank, said, I think everybody should, perhaps. There ought to be a debate about whether everybody's tax returns ought to be open, as in Norway, for 200 years.
And Danielle Williams, 27, a hairdresser of Blackberry Field, Kingsworthy, said, yes, then nothing's a secret, is it? I think we have a right to know.
And here's Matthew Krebs's view. Matthew is 33 and lives in Colson Road, Winchester, and is an IT support worker. He says, if they're in public office and are in charge of the country's finances, then perhaps there should be some transparency to ensure everything's done by the books.
Thank you very much. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836, or you could email them news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we come on to the Hampshire Chronicle's editorial comment. John Richards will be reading this, which is about a refusal by the City Council to increase numbers at the Boomtown Music Festival. John, please.
Yes, the title of this is Strange Decision to Keep Boomtown Low. The recent decision by officers at Winchester City Council to refuse the increase in numbers at Boomtown Music Festival does seem odd. The council says the application to alter the licence to increase numbers from 50,000 to 60,000 people should be refused partly because of fears of crime, public disorder and traffic. The licensing officers say the increase cannot be described as minor. Festival organisers and landowners have a right to scratch their heads over this. The council has allowed this event to gradually grow over the years, and by and large it seems well run, with few, if any, complaints from the police, at least not ones released to the public. There are some vociferous opponents of the event, but their numbers are relatively small because few people live near to the Cheesefoot Head and Matterley Estate. It might be simpler for Boomtown to hire a coach and book a hotel, so people who don't like the noise can have the weekend away. An increase of 10,000 from a base of 50,000 represents growth of 20%, hardly excessive for something that has been running for several years. The council had its chance to limit the event, which has grown into one of the most popular events of its kind. That opportunity has gone, and it's time to accept that Boomtown is here to stay, and that it should be allowed to develop and grow.
Thank you. Now, George Hayter's column this week is titled Talk to Us When We're Queuing. Read by John Reagan, please.
Yeah, and here's George lifting the lid on one of those petty minor irritations which possibly afflict us all from time to time. I was on my way to a meeting when I popped into a shop in Winchester High Street for an item of stationery. I needed squared paper, and I felt there was easily time to buy it and still arrive in time for my appointment. I hunted round the delightful shop, but couldn't find squared paper. Only one shop assistant was present, and she was absorbed in conversation with a customer. The minutes ticked by, and the transaction with the elderly customer didn't appear to be nearing a conclusion. So, should I risk being late for my appointment by continuing to wait in the hope that squared paper was in stock, or should I assume no squared paper and continue my journey? Excuse me, got any squared paper? I interjected from the back of the shop in what I hoped was a courteous but urgent tone. Well, the shop assistant rather took exception to my inquiry, but she told me where I could find what I wanted. So I selected my A4 squared paper, opened my wallet, and stood ready to pay as soon as the elderly customer moved off. My transaction with the shop assistant was a bit frosty, so sadly I'll be less inclined to pop in there again if I need something in a hurry. But it's a good thing I did call out. I got my paper, the shop got my money, and we were both winners. But many potential customers are too shy to call out as I did, and that's bad for business. The abundance of shops in Winchester and other towns is threatened by the internet. More and more shoppers are reluctant to stand in queues in shops and are instead staying home and shopping with online retailers like Amazon. Shopping on the web is cheap, fast, and physically effortless. However, Winchester High Street has its own appeal, including architectural charm, stretching your legs, and getting to grips with the merchandise. But shops in Winchester and elsewhere too often lay on that one big downer, standing in a queue. And almost as miserable as queuing is being ignored by staff. It's particularly miserable when the two are combined, queuing and being ignored. Staff could easily lighten the mood by calling out an apology for the length of the wait. Now, some staff do that, effortlessly switching from talking to the paying customer to acknowledging the presence of queues behind. And some particularly talented shop staff create quite a buzz in a shop by serving individuals at the same time as advising, warning, sympathising with and reassuring other customers. These superstar retail workers, in my opinion worth their weight in gold, move up a gear when the shop gets busy. At the same time as taking payment and keeping an eye out for theft, they notice what customers are up to and dispense helpful advice. They might say, "Be with you in a minute," to one customer. "That's £3.80, please," to another. And, "Goodbye, thank you," as a third heads for the door. And maybe to a puzzled-looking fourth, arriving with a branded bag from the shop, "If you've bought that for a refund, you'll need to go to the customer service desk." Retail is a tough job, I know. When I was a student, I enjoyed long days on my feet when I worked in busy stores like John Lewis in Oxford Street and the food halls of Harrods in Knightsbridge. But often, shop work is, like all jobs to some extent, tedious. So my multi-communication suggestion to retail professionals will, I hope, be seen as an exciting challenge. Instead of plodding away with one customer at a time, I hope shop staff will see that part of the role is a master of ceremonies, keeping everyone in the shop happy. People who work in shops are not mere retail assistants, they're hosts, and good hosts thrive on keeping their guests happy.
Thank you, John. Now, Belgarum gives us an alternative view of the news, so Margot, could you give us the first item, please?
And that alternative is about the master practiced on turf. Huxley Golf, the artificial turf manufacturer in Alresford, have reason to cheer the shock victory of Danny Willett in the Masters tournament on Sunday. The firm, based on the Dean, recently installed one of their products in his practice studio at his home in Yorkshire. His new permanent indoor putting green allows him to practice at any time of the day or night. It has a 3% slope and is 12 feet long by 7 feet wide. Danny Willett, speaking before his victory, said, "I look forward to putting my new Huxley Golf putting green into use when I'm not on tour. The flexibility that this will give me as part of my training regimen is fantastic, and the surface seems great, just like putting on natural grass tournament greens, but in the privacy of my own home. I'm excited by the opportunity. And if it's good enough for the Masters champion..." Well, the company's director, Paul Huxley, said, "We were delighted to be commissioned by Danny to create a golf at home practice area. All of us here are celebrating Danny's well-deserved win at the Masters and know that he will go on to win many more championships. If Danny's ability to practice freely at home, as in any small way, contributed to his triumphant achievement, then we could not be more thrilled." And there is a colour photograph accompanying this article showing the Masters champion after his shock victory, clad in the green blazer raising his arm with thumbs up sign and being to the applause of many fans all around him.
Women at the top. The appointment of Olivia Pinkney as Chief Constable of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight has got Belgarum thinking about when other important local organisations first appointed a woman to the top job. Winchester University, as recently as 2006, saw Professor Joy Carter take on the vice-chancellorship, while in 2003 it was Cathy Allison at the prison. Winchester City Council's first female political leader was Georgina Busher back in the 1980s, but the chief executive of the City Council since its formation in 1974 has always been a man, as has the top post of Hampshire County Council. Peter Simmons College has never had a female principal, at least not in the last 30 years. Margaret Thatcher famously became Prime Minister in 1979. So many Winchester organisations are lagging behind a bit. Ah, now you may ask, what about the Hampshire Chronicle? Well, its first female editor was the formidable Monica Woodhouse in 1939. She remained editor-in-chief until her death in 1987.
Wow. And I'm back to local politics, but thank heavens it's Belgarum's slightly sideways view. Heading, Local Choice is born in Kent. The deluge of propaganda leaflets are being stuffed through thousands of letterboxes across Winchester. But it's not the government's £9 million EU mail shot that's caught Belgarum's eye. It's a local election ad for May the 5th. Young Conservative Harry Sampson is touting himself as the local choice for St Luke Ward and is asking residents to stick the slogan in their window. Stanmore residents pleased to have another local boy in the running must have been disappointed when they read on, however. For how does the leaflet start? Born and bred in Kent, Harry moved to Winchester 3 years ago. Mr. Sampson and his Conservative colleague George Marshall James are both students at the university. And they're up against two Liberal Democrat candidates, Derek Green and Jamie Scott, who really do have local roots. Both live in council houses on the Stanmore estate in the heart of the two-seat ward.
Thank you. We now have... I sometimes call these hysterical items, but actually it's written here as historical items quite correctly. Starting with 25 years ago, please, Margot.
April 12th, 1991. Hospital charges. For a man who, in the opinion of at least one frustrated motorist, should have been lynched on Monday for introducing those controversial parking charges at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Welshman Itwell Wheel wasn't showing any apparent strain. But the same could not be said for a number of the drivers, who viewed with anger and frustration the full implications of the six gleaming new ticket machines and the ominously large warning signs threatening the possibility of the dreaded wheel clamp if they ignored the new charges. Chaos had been predicted the first day of the charges. I've never seen so many hospital staff arriving so early, said one official. For staff arriving late, finding a place to park was easier said than done. And a second article, death on the roads. 85 people were killed on Hampshire roads in the second half of last year, and 39 of them died because of speed, say Hampshire Police. In total, nearly 1,000 people were injured during this period as the result of drivers speeding. To combat what it calls, quote, high-risk accident locations where this dangerous behaviour is prevalent, end of quote, the police have pledged more resources. This will probably mean more unmarked patrol cars equipped with video cameras.
And now, 50 years ago, April the 16th, 1966, there are two pieces. The first one is entitled Royal Opening of HQ. Princess Margaret is to open the new headquarters of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police Authority in Rumsey Road, Winchester, on Wednesday, June the 1st. This was announced in London yesterday, Friday. Later in the day, the Princess will open the new Eastleigh Youth Centre in Parsfield Avenue. The police headquarters is now fully operational. Since the completion of the building at the end of the last year, staff have moved by sections from their temporary headquarters in North Walls, which will now become the new Winchester Division headquarters, at present at the Broadway. The second piece is tags or tattoos? The question of whether it is better for cattle to be marked with ear tags or by tattooing is to be put to the County Council's Association by Hampshire County Council's Small Holdings Committee, which is to ask for research to find out which of the two systems is the better. The committee decided this at their meeting in Winchester on Thursday last week. Ear tagging had been introduced in 1952, despite having a disadvantage such as ease of removal or substitution, as it had a decided advantage with the dark-skinned breeds. Mr. C. M. Jones suggested that if a different colour dye were used for black-skinned animals, tattooing would be best.
These two pieces come from 100 years ago, April the 15th, 1916, and as you can imagine, both are related to the Great War. First one's headed Volunteer Drivers. With the approach of the summer months, the Hampshire Automobile Club Northern Division are again endeavouring to arrange for a voluntary service of cars which will be available to take the wounded and sick soldiers at the Winchester hospitals out for occasional drives, and so help them toward convalescence. This kind of work has been very keenly appreciated by the soldiers, and we have no doubt that once the need is known and properly understood, there will be a number of car owners who would like to identify themselves with the movement. Second piece is headed Gallipoli Evacuation. A dispatch from General Sir Charles Monroe, dated from the First Army Headquarters, France, March the 6th, was issued on Monday night by the War Office. After personal investigation of the Gallipoli Peninsula, Sir Charles Monroe became convinced that complete evacuation was the only wise course to pursue. The Allied forces on the peninsula held, he states, a line possessing every possible military defect. The position was without depth, the communications were insecure and dependent on the weather. It was obvious that the Turks could hold us in front with a small force and prosecute their designs on Baghdad or Egypt or both.
200 years ago was April the 15th, 1816. The first item. Fraudsters arrested. On Tuesday evening, a Mr. G. Moss of Ditton in Surrey was passing through Bishopsgate Street. He was thrown down by four persons who apologised and helped him up, hoping he was not hurt. Scarcely had they gone, however, when Mr. M. felt for his pocketbook, containing nearly £50 in notes, and found it gone. Information was given thereof to the Lord Mayor. Officers were dispatched in various directions, and yesterday four of the country notes were traced to a man who was about to change them for those of the Bank of England. This led to his arrest and that of several other persons, by which means there is little doubt that the real delinquents will be discovered. The second item is headed Steamboat to Paris. Letters from Paris speak much of the interest excited there by the appearance of the first steamboat which ever crossed the English Channel and ascended the Seine to Paris. This event may not improbably form an epoch in the history of commerce. Certain it is that the active imagination of the French see in it a fruitful germ of important consequences, and they already speak of plans for rendering Paris a great commercial depot upon the principles which led to the erection of our extensive docks in the Isle of Dogs.
We will now have a look at what's on in the coming weeks. And the first will be read by Margot, please.
And this is the Students Unite for a Musical Concert. Winchester Rotary has united with Hampshire Specialist Music Course students for a concert later this month. It takes place at St Lawrence Church on Thursday, April the 28th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are £10. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the music course, and the Rotary Concert is one of a series celebrating the milestone. The concert features music by Schubert and Mendelssohn for solo voice and chamber works. Proceeds will support the summer music masterclasses held at the college. Tickets can be obtained from the offices of Carter Jonas in Jury Street, Winchester, or reserved by emailing rotaryinwinchester@gmail.com. I'll repeat that. rotaryinwinchester@gmail.com. The HSMC moved to Simmons in 1980, and this article is accompanied by a colour photograph showing six of the students. Five of them are female, and they're clutching their instruments, double bass, cello, viola and violin, and the one male present has nothing to show, but of course he is a pianist.
Of course.
We knew that. Oh, sorry, yes. I beg your pardon. This one, next one. Emma at 200. From English Village to Global Appeal, Chawton House Library. 2 centuries after one of Jane Austen's most famous novels was published, people in Hampshire are celebrating its birthday. To mark the bicentenary of Emma, Chawton House Library has teamed up with Southampton students to launch an exhibition. With backing from the University of Southampton, Emma at 200, From English Village to Global Appeal, has been designed to celebrate the global success of the novel and explore its reception from readers. It is believed that Jane Austen wrote and revised some of her most famous works, including Emma, while living in a cottage in the village of Chawton near Alton, making frequent visits to the neighbouring Chawton House, owned by her brother, Edward Knight. It has been suggested that Donwell Abbey in Emma was modelled on Chawton House, and that the book's fictional village of Highbury was based on nearby Alton. Among the many items on display in the exhibition will be an English first edition of the novel, alongside a first edition from America and a first French translation, both published in 1816. Emma at 200 at Chawton House Library runs until September the 25th.
Now, a couple of items of interest from Winchester Cathedral. On Thursday, April the 21st, there's an opera masterclass as 6 young singers prepare for performance. You can buy tickets. So an all-day ticket will cost £15, which might seem a lot, but it does include a cup of tea and a cake. Or you can just come for the morning or the afternoon. It'll cost £7.50. The second item from Winchester Cathedral is on the 23rd of April. That's a Saturday, St George's Day. There's a prom night at 7:30 in the evening featuring Hampshire Youth Orchestra and the Winchester Youth Orchestra, and it's in aid of the Mayor's Charities. And the last item for you for what's on is on Sunday, April the 24th, is the Guildhall in Winchester, 7:30 p.m. A programme entitled This Royal Throne, a celebration in words and speeches. You get more information on that from the Tourist Information Centre on 01962 840 500. 01962 840 500. Now, a letter from Westminster this week is written by George Hollingbury. John Reagan, please.
Yes, and George says, we are very fortunate in Hampshire to experience relatively low levels of crime. While any criminal activity is unwelcome, the vast majority of our communities are safe and pleasant places to live. In fact, figures from the Office of National Statistics show that between June 2010 and September last year, overall crime fell in the county by around 6%. But there's always been one stubborn holdout against these reductions, and that's been rural crime. The theft of diesel or fuel oil, the removal of trailers and farm machinery, or even the stealing of livestock. Rural theft cost the UK economy an estimated £44.5 million in 2013, and, like any crime, has a devastating impact on the victims, farmers, landowners, and others in the rural community. As an MP representing a largely rural constituency, this issue is always near the top of my list when I meet with the police, and it's also invariably the first issue raised by farmers and people living in the countryside when they attend my surgeries. However, I can now report some good news. After many years of rises, we're now starting to see some reductions in rural crime. In 2014, the overall cost to the UK economy as a whole fell to £37.8 million, and in Hampshire this translated to about £1.7 million of cost to our local economy. Certainly, there's more work to be done. There will be reversals along the way, but I'm encouraged by this progress. So what are the reasons for this fall? Well, there are many, but Hampshire Constabulary and its Chief Constable, the former Chief Constable Andy Marsh, have to take the lion's share of the credit. Officers have worked extremely hard with communities and parish councils to deter people from committing crime in the countryside and in detecting criminal activity. The Country Watch scheme is just one example of how these issues can be encouraged. By engaging with local communities, police officers encourage local people to report rural crime in their villages and to provide reassurance that officers are present. Their mission statement includes a determination not only to target those who commit crimes, but also reduce opportunities for crime to take place. This is all good news, but we cannot be complacent.
Thank you, John. Now, before we move on to the general news, we have the excitement of reporting of the lighting up times. On Saturday the 16th of April, the sun will rise at 6:12 a.m. and set at 8 p.m. And on Wednesday the 20th of April, the sun will rise at 6 a.m. and will set again at 8:10 p.m. Now, just for a change, we've included some items of interest regarding local sports teams. The first one, Margot, please.
And this one is ahead. The women of Hursley secure a league and cup double. And this is in women's cricket. Hursley Park extended their domination of women's cricket at Fleming Park by once again winning the South Hants indoor league and cup double. They won all 12 league matches and then routed their B team in a one-sided cup final. And I have part of a colour photograph of the team, presumably. And apologies if I'm guessing wrongly, but I think the names are, by a process of elimination, Gemma Green, who is clutching the cup and looking very pleased with herself, and Hannah Timmins. And seated in front of them is Charlotte Taylor. I hope I've got the names right, but well done them.
Thank you, Margot. John?
And this is men's cricket. And we had a discussion a couple of minutes ago just to check that the headline of this is right. We think it says, Hants blow as Reese is crocked. The editor's cut off a piece of the paper, so it's difficult to be precise. Hampshire Cricket have been dealt a cruel early season blow with the news that England seamer Reese Topley has broken his right hand on debut. Topley, who left Essex to join his new county for this season, is yet to discover the full extent of the injury he suffered on day one of the Specsavers Championship season when he was hit by a bouncer from Warwickshire's Boyd Rankin on Sunday. But the 22-year-old, a member of England's squad of ICC World 2020 finalists over the past month in India, knows already he has a fracture in a few places beneath the knuckle. The tail-ender bravely batted on at the Aegeus Bowl, despite his injury, amazingly contributing his first-class career best of 15 as Hampshire struggled for runs.
Here's some good news for Spitfires fans. Eastleigh Football Club close in on the playoffs. Eastleigh boosted their playoff hopes by extending their unbeaten run to 8 matches with a first win against Barrow in front of a bumper home crowd. The Spitfires are now within a point of the top 5 with a game in hand on Tranmere Rovers after beating Barrow 3-1 at the Silver Lake Stadium.
Thank you, John. If you have a view about whether or not you'd like to hear further items of sports in future reports, then obviously we would love to hear from you. We're now on to items of general news, starting off with Margot, please.
And the first one I've come across is the Medals of Hill 60 hero at a museum. The son of a Victoria Cross winner is in Winchester to see the medal go on display in a military museum in Peninsula Barracks. It was one of the bravest feats of World War I, a conflict packed with selfless heroism. In the Battle of Hill 60 in 1915, Geoffrey Harold Woolley went above and beyond his call of duty and was awarded the Victoria Cross. Now a display cabinet at the Royal Green Jackets Museum in the Peninsula Barracks in Winchester, showcasing the medal, has been unveiled. Woolley served with the Queen's Victoria Rifles during the Great War of 1914-18. Hill 60 had previously been captured by the German 30th Division in 1914 during the First Battle of Ypres. It was recovered by British forces on April the 17th in 1915. But the Germans launched a ferocious counterattack to reclaim the hill, and during the night of April the 20th and 21st, they attacked the position on Hill 60 held by Woolley's battalion. As the only remaining officer, and with very few men, G.H. Woolley, who was only 22 at the time, successfully resisted attacks on his trench, despite being under continual enemy bombardment and machine gun fire. He continued throwing bombs and encouraging his men until relieved. Of the 230 men that attempted to resist the German attack, he was one of only 20 who survived. Second Lieutenant Woolley was the first Territorial Army soldier to be awarded the VC during the First World War. 2 days later, he was promoted directly to the rank of captain. He saw further action in the early stages of the Second Battle of Ypres until he was invalided back to England, suffering from poison gas and psychological effects. When he had recovered, he was appointed as an instructor at the Officers' Infantry School and then returned to the Western Front in summer 1916 as a General Staff Officer, Grade 2, on the Third Army Staff. He wrote poetry in the war and went on to study theology at Oxford, and later served in North Africa in World War II, where he was a senior chaplain and published a pocket book of prayers, which was widely read among troops. He later became a vicar of St Mary's Church in Harrow and East West Grinstead in Kent, and he died in 1968. And this is accompanied by a colour photograph showing Nicholas Woolley with Vera Hayes looking at the new display of the Royal Green Jackets Museum in Winchester, and also an old photograph of a British soldier guarding a captured trench, showing all the bleak and frightening conditions that they had to put up with.
Daredevil dentist off to Himalayas. He spent his summer holiday eating piranhas, living on a boat and pulling out hundreds of teeth. Dr. Peter Sound swapped his comfortable Hampshire practice for the Peruvian rainforest and Amazon basin to provide dental care. Previously, he trekked to the slums of Kibera in Kenya and pulled more than 500 teeth from patients. Now, Hampshire's own daredevil dentist is back on his travels, and this time he's heading to Nepal. The 52-year-old from Winchester hopes to make a difference to people affected by last year's devastating magnitude 8 earthquake, which killed nearly 10,000 people. As part of one of the first dental missions in the country since the disaster, he hopes to provide as much dental care and pain relief as possible. He also hopes to help educate families on how to prevent tooth decay in children. The dad of two, who qualified as a dentist in 1988, will leave his practices to head to the capital, Kathmandu, on April the 23rd as part of a team from Lanford dental charity DentAid. He will then carry boxes of dental equipment, including a special folding dental chair, across the Himalayan foothills of Garambezi and Damikau, where they will try to set up a system of sustainable care for residents who've been forced to live in temporary housing since the earthquake. Dr. Sound, who is funding the £2,500 trip himself, was inspired to help charity since his wife Veena died of cancer, aged 43, in 2007. And he is determined to help those living in the most disadvantaged communities in the world.
Now, don't panic when you hear the headline of this next article. It contains a term which I will explain for those who aren't familiar with the local issue. Studentification, not as bad as estimated. Now, studentification is the perception amongst some residents of Stanmore that the area is being overtaken by students. Here we go with the article. The scale of studentification in Stanmore is smaller than claimed by campaigners, according to a council study, which shows around a quarter of the estate is occupied by students or young professionals. Officials have counted 394 shared houses in the first survey of its kind, slightly fewer than the 400 estimated by residents who warned that the community was at, quote, breaking point. Houses in multiple occupation, known as HMOs, are popular with young people due to their reduced rents, but late-night parties and antisocial behaviour have caused friction. The Stanmore HMO lobby claimed in late 2014 that there were around 400 shared houses, with students living in more than half the homes sold under right to buy since the 1980s. They account for about a quarter of properties overall in Stanmore, but a greater share of its population, with most housing four or five people. Public campaigning has subsided since leader Amanda Chard let her house to students and moved to Batcher Farm. Sorry. Okay. A clampdown on HMOs is due to be introduced by Winchester City Council in May, forcing landlords to apply for planning permission before they convert family homes. Campaigners failed to convince the council to bring the move forward a year, despite gathering a petition with more than 300 signatures. An estimated 700 houses in Stanmore have been sold under the right to buy, with 880 left in council hands. But ward councillor Jamie Scott, who led the survey and lives in a council house in Stanmore, said there are in fact around 1,600 students in Stanmore, and some properties have seven or eight people in them. There is quite a lot of noise problems and issues with bins and parking.
Scouts scale heights in Snowdonia. Scouts have been conquering the heights of Snowdonia. Around 40 members of the 11th Winchester Scout Group of all ages took part in his annual spring trip to the mountains of Wales, testing out their climbing skills and other scouting skills. Six of the Explorer Scouts and two leaders were on the trip fundamentally for the purpose of carrying out their practice hike for the Duke of Edinburgh Gold Award. For the others, it was a chance to test themselves in challenging terrain. Many of the scouts spent time hiking in the mountains, braving the elements including driving rain, stinging sleet, and strong winds, but also climbing. And there is a photograph in colour showing the 11th Winchester Scout Group leaping for joy during their recent trip to Snowdonia. And I don't know how many are there, about 20 or so. And I don't think they're standing on the pinnacle of Snowdon. But at any rate, it looks very impressive and they're very pleased with their skills.
Inspiring New Inventors. Their mission is to inspire tomorrow's inventors. Tech Camp is a holiday camp for young people who want to make their ideas a reality. They teach the youngsters skills, including engineering, coding, and IT. The event at Sparsholt College had a small group of students aged between 9 and 17 making laser tag guns, rockets and robots. Tom Ward, founder of Tech Camp, said, "By attending our camps, young people get to learn fascinating and very practical coding skills, which will help them stay ahead of the pack." A taste of some of this summer's itinerary at Tech Camp includes exploring robotics and laser tag electronics, guaranteed to enlighten and enthrall in equal measure. The next course at Sparsholt will run over 4 weeks in August. And for more information, if you have access to the web, you can go to Tech Camp, that's TECHCAMP, all one word, .org.uk. That's techcamp.org.uk.
Here's a lovely story. Baby meerkats, new arrivals at Marwell Zoo, are practicing standing up on their back legs. But the tiny creatures, only a few weeks old, can only stand up for a few seconds before they wobble over. They're learning the pose which adult meerkats use when they're on sentry duty, looking out for predators to protect the rest of their group. Meerkats, part of the mongoose family, are known as cooperative breeders, which means that other adults, as well as the mother, help to care for the young. And these tiny new arrivals weigh just 100 grams each and measure 5 inches from nose to tail, which is about the size of an iPhone. And that's accompanied by the most delightful picture of two tiny, tiny meerkats paying very close attention to mum as she instructs them in the very important skill of sitting up.
I remember it well. Firefighters tackle blaze in first floor flat. Winchester fire crews tackled a fire in the city centre last Thursday. Firefighters were called to a flat in Romsey Road, Winchester, at around 8:30 p.m. after an oven caught alight. It took several hours to tackle. They arrived at the property near the Westgate Hotel to find smoke billowing out of the first floor window. The lower part of the road near the Great Hall was closed off for the crews to operate safely.
Mayfest returns after 4 years. After a 4-year absence, Winchester Mayfest is back in town. On Saturday, May the 7th, the High Street and Cathedral Close will come alive with the colours and sounds of a diverse array of folk dancing. Around 25 teams, known as sides, will be dancing in the different Morris traditions, as well as Appalachian dancers who will be entertaining the crowds in St Morris's Covert. These sides come from Hampshire, the Isle of Wight, and neighbouring counties, and will put on a fantastic variety of displays. The highlight of the day will be watching each side put on a show dance for the mayor from 2 till 3:30 p.m. in front of the cathedral. This will be immediately followed by a mass dance for the public to join in, led by Wickham Morris. The event hopes to attract more than just die-hard Morris dance fans. Ticklish All Sorts professional children's entertainment team will be in the cathedral close throughout the day, and children from Signet's playgroup in Barton Stacey will put on a maypole display at 1 p.m. In St Lawrence Church, you can enjoy music from the Southampton Folk Orchestra, Bella Voce Youth Choir and Barton Stacey Community Choir. All the displays and events are free, but collections will be taken for the future running of Mayfest.
Here's some good news for drivers. £1.5 million pothole boost. Hampshire has been given £1.5 million of fresh ammunition in the war against potholes. A new government grant will help fill nearly 30,000 holes in the next 12 months. Hampshire County Council's £1.49 million grant, will fix 28,000 holes, and Southampton will get £80,000, which is enough for 1,500 potholes. Both councils use complex formulae to decide which potholes are fixed first. Issues are spotted by regular road inspections, as well as reports from councillors and the public. The pothole action funds, PAFs, are calculated according to the size of local road networks and are separate from the £250 million investment in county roads from Highways England. Hampshire County Council's grant is the biggest awarded to any council in the region, and that's accompanied by a picture of a car very, very carefully guiding itself around one of those massive potholes that we're more and more used to seeing nowadays.
A rather salacious headline, but nude rambler vows to put on clothes to care for ill mother. His defiant and barefaced crusade for public nudity has spanned more than a decade and cost the public hundreds of thousands of pounds. Now Hampshire's naked rambler, Stephen Goff, has sensationally vowed to put his clothes back on while he cares for his ill mother. But he is refusing to give up his cause, saying he could strip off again in the future. The former Marine has insisted on getting his kit off in public for over 10 years, but has put clothes back on again to take his elderly and frail mum for walks without getting arrested. The shock revelation comes just 3 months after his latest stint in jail following another spell of public nakedness. It follows him telling a top judge he would keep his clothes off until he dies. In what was his 40th court appearance, after being sentenced to 200 days in jail for breaching a no-nudity ASBO. Mr. Goff, 57, of Chamberlain Road, Eastleigh, has spent the last 10 years in jail for persistently hiking in the nude as part of his one-man protest against laws restricting public nudity. The dad of two famously trekked from Land's End to John O'Groats in 2003, wearing nothing but his rucksack, his hat, and his walking boots. I wonder, did he have the radio on? But now he is promising to turn his back on that lifestyle so that he can peacefully take out his mum, Nora, aged 89, who is battling dementia.
And you'll be pleased to hear that last article was not accompanied by a photograph.
If only it was.
However, dogs get chipped. More than 100 dogs were microchipped in Winchester just days before new legislation was introduced. Under the new law in force across the UK, owners are liable for fines of £500 if they fail to microchip their pets. The event at Mole Country Stores in Winnell on April the 1st saw scores of dog owners turn up and was declared a huge success by Winchester City Council animal welfare officers.
Brownie Iris, Ace of Cakes. She is truly the Ace of Cakes. Winchester Brownie Iris Miller, aged 10, is celebrating after being crowned the regional winner of a cupcake design competition held by Maison Blanc Patisserie and Boulangerie. Maison Blanc in Winchester High Street tasked the second Hairstock Winchester Brownie Group to create a brand new cupcake with music as their inspiration and theme. They were asked to work up an innovative and eye-catching design with an appealing flavour combination with the theme of music, as the winner of the national competition will have their cakes sold and profits will be donated to music therapy charity Nordoff Robbins, who are dedicated to changing the lives of vulnerable and isolated people. Now, there isn't a picture to accompany that, but fortunately we have an extremely comprehensive description as follows. Iris's winning cupcake is called Gold Tastic. It has a vanilla-flavoured sponge with chocolate chips, milk chocolate buttercream, and a white chocolate musical note with gold edible spray on the icing. Maison Blanc's manager, Stéphane Boiron, said, "Huge congratulations to Iris. I can vouch that this cake doesn't just look amazing, it tastes delicious too."
How to follow that? I'm salivating, but still. Anyway, residents of Hyde with property within the precincts of the medieval abbey are being invited to take part in a community archaeology project. Hyde 900 is investigating what lies beneath their gardens in the area close to the burial place of King Alfred the Great. The project is being launched, with a pilot dig involving two small pits in a garden in Aylswyther Terrace, King Alfred Place, over the weekend of Friday to Sunday, April the 22nd to the 24th. Up to 48 volunteers will be able to take part in two-hour sessions under the supervision of professional archaeologists. The garden is located where the Abbey's church south transept is believed to have met the cloisters and is just a few yards from the burial place of King Alfred the Great, his wife and his son. The organisers stress, however, that they are not bone hunting, but encouraged by the prospect of uncovering a variety of building materials. There will be an open day and mini exhibition of any discoveries in the garden on Sunday, April the 23rd, together with a finds surgery for residents to consult experts about objects from their own houses and gardens. David Sperling of Hyde 900 and the project leader said, "This specific site has not been investigated since the late 18th century, when prisoners at the adjacent County Bridewell, which is Winchester's prison, dug over the rough ground to make a garden for the prison governor. There are, however, many finds dating back to the time of the abbey from this general area, so we are hoping to strike lucky and add to our understanding of the abbey and its history." And there is a short, there's a brief colour photograph showing David Sperling and Edward Fennell, who were volunteers from Reuniting the Stones project at Hyde Gate, Winchester. And they're standing in front of the Hyde Abbey Church.
Fun-filled Time Lord salute. Hampshire was invaded by the Daleks at the weekend, but Doctor Who materialised in time to defeat his infamous foes. Thousands of people travelled through time and space to visit a two-day event held at the Winchester Science Centre, which paid homage to the celebrated television Time Lord. The event was organised by charity Dalek Squad, a group of enthusiasts who build and operate life-size Daleks. They tour the country, entertaining huge crowds and raising money for good causes at the same time. Guests included Salisbury-born actor John Levine, 74, who was Sergeant Benton of UNIT when John Pertwee played the Doctor in the early 1970s Doctor Who episodes. Fans also had a chance to meet John Davey, a creature actor who has played Daleks, Cybermen and other monsters in almost 40 episodes of the long-running sci-fi drama. Also, there was Matthew Dale, who played Big John in the episode Robot of Sherwood alongside the latest Doctor, Peter Capaldi. And there were quite a few photographs accompanying this. I'm not really going to attempt to describe them. It's a long time since I've watched Doctor Who, and I assume that many of these are supposed to be he, but they are having varying degrees of success looking like him, in my view.
Here's news of some important work going on at a local post office. A Winchester post office is set to undergo refurbishment, which will mean it can stay open 7 days a week. Oliver's Battery post office will be closed for a number of days in April and May to allow the modernisations to take place. The refurbishment is part of a major investment programme. It will mean the post office service will be available during the store's opening hours from Monday to Friday from 7am to 9pm. And on Saturday from 8am to 8pm, and it will also be open on Sunday from 8am to 7pm. Post office services will be provided at an open plan counter located alongside the retail till on the left hand side of the shop as you enter. There'll be space for customers to queue within the store so they can reach the post office and retail counter without hindrance. Area manager David Gold said, "We're making it easier for customers to get their cash, send and collect their mail, and do their banking, because we know how important these services are to many local residents." The post office will be closed from April the 27th and will open at May the 9th. And alternative branches, meanwhile, can still be found at the Stony Lane Post Office and Stanmore Post Office on Cromwell Road.
Payout row cop lands top role. A former police manager at the centre of a pay row has landed a new role at a leading Hampshire hospital. Jenny Douglas Todd was controversially given £220,000 in public money after just a year as chief executive of Hampshire's Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner. Now she has become non-executive director at University Hospital Southampton Foundation Trust, earning up to £15,000 a year. Her pay packet, also due from her 3 years as chief executive of Hampshire Police Authority, was derided as exorbitant by the Taxpayers Alliance pressure group. Miss Douglas Todd, who lives near Winchester, will serve on Southampton General Hospital's Trust Board for 3 years. She also served as Director of Police and Research for the Independent Police Complaints Commission, investigating committee chair for the General Dental Council. Miss Douglas Todd was appointed a member of the Judicial Conduct Investigations Office by the Lord Chief Justice and previously spent 3 years as a resident advisor for the UK in Turkey to help set up a law enforcement complaints system.
This next piece is about the latest South Health failures, of which you will have heard. Bosses at Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust have vowed to make major improvements to protect patients. The Care Quality Commission, CQC, has told the Trust it must significantly improve to protect patients who are at risk of harm and that it had failed to learn from previous mistakes. It comes after a damning independent report slammed Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust for failing to properly investigate the deaths of hundreds of people. CQC inspectors visited the Trust in January as part of an inspection. In a statement, the CQC said it has issued a warning notice, quote, requiring the Trust to improve its governance arrangements to ensure robust investigation and learning from incidents and deaths to reduce future risks to patients, unquote.
All right, let's lighten the mood. Big Top Fun at Ball to help youngsters. Fire eaters and stilt animal walkers were among the many spectacular attractions at the Full Flood Ball. The glamorous event saw more than 400 people gather at Peter Simmons College for the charity bash on Saturday. The sports hall was transformed into a luxurious circus-themed venue where ballgoers enjoyed food, wine, live music from the Lionels and the famous vodka luge. Guests also enjoyed a spot of gambling, and those who were more adventurous attempted to tame the rodeo bull. This year, the main chosen charity to benefit is Street Reach Winchester, which supports young people through community outreach work. Firms across Winchester and further afield supported the event, and more than 40 prizes were on offer for the silent auction. Full Flood Ball chairman Mitch Allen said, "The evening was a great success, and I'd like to thank our dedicated and imaginative committee of volunteers who've made it all possible. We're also enormously grateful to our principal sponsors, Belgarum, without whom we wouldn't be able to get the ball up and running." An organiser still totting up the proceeds.
Shopping centre takes in zany zebras. A Winchester shopping centre has welcomed two new residents. A vacant shop in the Brooks Centre is now home to a pair of giant zebra sculptures. Shoppers will be able to watch artists Denise Hughes and Lucy McLaughlin as they take part in the extravaganza this summer. With less than 3,000 Grevy zebras left in the wild, Marble has chosen a Grevy zebra sculpture to highlight the plight of the species in the wild through its zany zebra trails. After the trail, all of the large sculptures will be sold at auction to raise funds for Marwell's work to conserve endangered grevy zebras and other wildlife and to support communities living in the arid lands of northern Kenya.
Shop on the Move. A Winchester city centre shop is reopening in bigger premises later this month. White Stuff is moving from Market Street into the High Street and opens on Friday, April the 22nd. To celebrate, the shop that specialises in selling things that are white will host an opening party for customers May the 11th and May the 12th.
Thank you very much, everyone. Well, that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle Extracts for this week. Just a reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. Thanks to the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams and to our editors, Sue Fraden, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And John Reagan.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter Lydiard. Goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you have finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible? Thank you very much.